So the first chelik of this sefer talked about the four nations that oppose Klal Yisrael in this world. And those four nations, they have Talmidim, which are still very much alive today. There's no real Babylonian dynasty nowadays, but there's people that they oppose Klal Yisrael the same way the Babylonians did, in the same way the Paras and Mada did, in the same way the Yavin did, in the same way the Edom did. The second chelik talks about Yavin. It's about Chanukah. So right now we're moving away from the four nations, and we're going to focus on Yavin. I was just learning with my chavrusa that there's 10 measures of Gaiva that came down to the world. And nine of the measures of Gaiva were taken by Elam. Elam, Ayin Yud Lamed Mem. So according to some Rishayim, the Rambam Chumash says Elam is Yavan. So Yavan has nine of the 10 measures of Gaiva are in Yavan. The Maral explains the Gemara Kedusha. The Maral explains the Gemara Kedusha. What does it mean that there's nine measures, you know, 10 measures come down? 10 measures of Gaiva come down. How do you measure Gaiva? 10 measures of Gaiva come down. Nine of them are taken by the Greeks, and one of them is the rest of the world. The Maral explains that anytime the number 10 always represents totality. It's a misper klali. When you're talking about 10 measures, that means you have every single permutation of Gaiva. There's a lot of different types of Gaiva. You have 10, you have everything. He said, when you're breaking it down into two segments of 9 and 1, what that means is that the 9 is the source, it's the Iker, and the 1 is the outgrowth.
Why does it mean that?
Because 9 is the, you know, 9 is all the chalakim except for 1. It's not like a division that Yavin has 9 measures of Gaiva, and the rest of the world has 1 measure of Gaiva, and it's totally unrelated. You know? Like, there was Gaiva coming down, like, bags and bags of Gaiva, they're like an Ufruf. And there's always a kid at the Ufruf that he grabs more candies than any other kid could have. And then he hides them in his pockets, and he goes around to all the fathers saying, I didn't get. He takes those and he puts them in his pocket, and then there's the other kids that are crying because they didn't get anything. That's not what it's like. The guy was coming flying down, and the Yavanim were really good at catching the bags, and they got 9 bags. And the rest of the world had 1 bag, and there's no connection between the 9 bags of Gaiva that the Yavanim have and the 1 bag that the rest of the world have. That's not the way it is. That is a false representation of what the Gemara means. The Maral says when the Gemara uses these kind of numbers, it means that the Iker Gaiva is in Yavin. And any Gaiva that's in the rest of the world, the source of the Gaiva, the rest of the world, comes from Yavin, which means the Yavin really has all 10. 9 means that the power of Gaiva emanates from Yavin. The lion's share of the Gaiva is present in Yavin. And then any Gaiva that's in the rest of the world is there because they're part of the same world that Yavin's in.
Meaning if Yavin didn't have it.
Any Gaiva. If they would kill the guy, if they would smash the guy, but then the one would, from the rest of the world, would also disappear. So that's a very shame in Afghamina. That's, you know, right. Because the kiyum of the guy in the whole world, it means that the whole kiyum of guy in the world comes from Yavin, and there's no mukum for any guy. Yavin gives mukum for guy. They make a home for guy here. And because of that, the guy could spread throughout the rest of the world. That's how he explains the numbers. Yavin has what to have guy about. Gaiva is something which is a midah, which is miyuchad by human beings. compassion, animals have anger, animals sharing that. It's a lot of human emotions and even thought processes.
Leopard.
Self-preservation. There's animals that they have a connection, a family unit. There's also guppies that their mothers eat their babies as soon as they're born. Yes, yes. Yes, yes. But any midah that's shared by humans and animals alike is nothing to be proud of. Humans have bodily functions, animals have bodily functions. Humans eat, they take in food, and then the food comes out. And the animals do the same exact thing. There's nothing to be proud of. If you have a sense of self-preservation, like, you don't get a lot of credit for that. If somebody has a sense of self-preservation, that they don't drink a bottle of bleach, you don't deserve a lot of credit for that. Wow, I'm so proud of you. You went the whole day today and you didn't drink a single bottle of bleach. You are great. Awesome.
What if you only drank half a bottle of bleach? And it was off campus.
So then you are a failure. You're a failure. You are a failure. Go back and drink another half a bottle.
Maybe the leopard wasn't Gaiva?
Alright, so you're asking a question, Lachar. You're saying that the measure refers to Yavin as a leopard. That's Azus Panim, that's brazenness. They have that also. I mean, to be fair, there's other Rishayim in the way these meters match up. But right now, I want to talk about the Ramban.
Okay?
I want to talk about the Ramban. They have what to be Mizgayim because the part of the person that you have the right to be a Bargaiv about that actually makes sense is the intellect. Because that's an accomplishment. The intellect is something which is above the physical. The intellect is not shared by an animal. Animals do not have intellect. They have instinct. They do not have intellect. So if your intellect is finely honed, if it's finely developed, if you worked on it, if you accumulated knowledge, you have what to be proud of. Now, my Rebbe, Reb Moshe Aaron Stern, Zichro Livracha, told us over a story that he was in Avad. When he was a bacher, he was in Avad by Rabbi Eliyahu Lapiyan, Zichro Livracha. He's known as the Lev Eliyahu. He was a mashkiach in a yeshiva called Kfar Chassidim, which is still one of the chashev yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. It's a Muslim yeshiva. It's a very good yeshiva. It's a stark yeshiva. It's in Kfar Chassidim. That's why, hence the name Kfar Chassidim. Rabbi Eliyahu Lapiyan was the mashkiach there. He was a mashkiach all over the place. He came, he had Tamidim, he had Vadim, he had Chaburas. He was a Rav in London. He was one of the great Musa personalities. And he had a Vad. And in the Vad, the Bachram asked Rabbi Eliyahu Lapiyan for an Eitzah. They needed an Eitzah. They're fighting their Gaiva, and they wanted their practical solutions. How to deal with Gaiva. They were struggling. They were thinking, how do you deal with Gaiva? His Vad, they used to give them Ubdas. They used to give them exercises on how to deal with the Midas. So he told them, he said, I want to tell you a Gemara. It says in the Gemara, Gimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sain An. There's three that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates. Gimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sain An. Sin, Vav, Nun, Aleph, Nun, Tzavis. Hashem hates. Ani Misyaher, a poor guy that's a Balgaiva. Asha Mechachesh, a rich guy that's a liar. And a Zakin Menayev, an elderly person that's immoral. Hashem hates those three. I'll repeat them. Ani Misyaher, a poor person that's a Balgaiva. Asha Mechachesh, a wealthy man that lies. And a Zakin Menayev, an elderly man that's immoral. Kadosh Baruch Hu hates people that are immoral. Kadosh Baruch Hu hates people that lie, and Kadosh Baruch Hu hates people that are bali gaiva. So why dafka this combination? A poor guy that's a bali gaiva, Kadosh Baruch Hu hates, and a rich guy that's a bali gaiva, Kadosh Baruch Hu loves, or an old man that's immoral, Kadosh Baruch Hu hates, and a young man that's immoral, Hashem loves. Like, what's in the Gemara? We're talking about the bigger Vengris. What difference does it make? What stature the people have? What difference does it make? And Rebel explained that Kadosh Baruch Hu knows that we're human, and he knows that we make mistakes, and he knows that we fail. And there's a failure that a person fails because of human nature. So who created human nature? Who created human nature in the first place? God created human nature. That means God knows that there's certain areas that we're going to have a hard time in. So it's wrong. It's wrong to give into human nature. But there's a struggle. You win some, you lose some. A young guy has a problem with immorality. That's called Derech HaTeva. He's young. He's got the fire of Taiva burning. You win some, you lose some. That some, when you're a young person, you have to take that attitude. If you don't fight, you're gonna be overrun. You're gonna die. Dying is not fun. If you fight, that doesn't mean you're gonna win every time. You win some, you lose some, but at least you'll survive until you get older. Sometimes you have this mindset to just keep on fighting and try and find ways to keep the battle going. Even though you know that you're not going to achieve a final total victory, just keep yourself going until you get older. You get older, the fire goes down. It's easy to deal with. So you're not striving for perfection. You're just trying not to be totally overrun and defeated and give up. Don't give up. So a young man, that's a menayef, it's wrong. But it's bederech hateva. It's human nature. A poor man, he can't make a living. He got fired from every job he tried. He's a schlamazel. He's got a wife with 19 barefoot children at home. Their stomachs, they're growling and screaming the whole day and night because their stomachs are empty. They're hungry. But they have lousy quality food. Someone offers him, I don't know, maybe 50,000 bucks. He goes smuggle Swatch watches into Switzerland. Could you believe it or not? I don't know what the situation is today, but when the Swatch watches first came out in Switzerland, they were highly regulated. They did it on purpose. They wanted to keep the price up, so they only let out a certain amount at a time, and you could only buy them in certain places. So they were actually cheaper outside the country than in the country. So there was a smuggling business to smuggle Swatch watches into Switzerland. And I know all the details because I know someone that did it. I know all the details how it was done. And I will not share them with you. So if you remember those screaming children? The screaming children? The ones with the empty stomachs? So somebody offers you a deal. And you could take a flight into Switzerland, and your problems are going to be over. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's illegal. You can get caught. You can go to jail. It's wrong. But the guy does it. Is he going against his nature and taking that job? It's human nature. Human nature is poor people. They can't make a living legally. They also have to live. The families have to live. So it's human nature. If they'd be able to make it legally, they'd be able to have a good paying job, they would do that. But they don't have one. So they give it to temptation and they do something awesome. And they're rishayim. But a rich guy, what does he have to lie for? Why does he have to fool people? Someone's making a comfortable living. He has whatever he needs. He just lies. Why is he lying? Abidakatavu, you lie if you need the money. He has the money. He makes up stories. We had a guy in Yeshiva. To this very day, I have no idea anything about the guy because he was so not straight. He had a whole legend about himself. We had no idea what the truth was. He confused us all. He was playing with everyone. It was amazing how well he was playing everyone. He was an expert in 7 forms of martial arts. He knew how to break things with energy. You know, he was able to break things by passing his hands through them without even, you know, using a lot of force. He gave a martial arts course in Yeshiva. They finally caught on to him because he kept on doing the same moves over and over again. He never advanced because he didn't know anymore. They caught him. They caught him. He was teaching everyone the same things. The next lesson, there was no advancement. He had a legend. That's not human nature. You have no reason to do that. You have plenty of money. What do you have to do that for? Someone that lies, a wealthy person that lies, is going against his nature. A wealthy person is a Baal Gaiva. It's totally understandable. He's got 7 cars in his driveway. He's got a convertible. He's got a little red convertible. He's got a Maserati. He's got a Rolls Royce. He has a Lexus. He's got a 1953 original Mercedes Benz. He flies to London to go shopping for his suits, and he has a special tailor making things for him. He's the man. He looks good. He looks good, he feels good, he walks around, he struts his stuff. He's a Baal Gaiva, he's a Rasha. But it's natural. He's struggling. He's struggling. It's very hard to be a wealthy person and not be a Baal Gaiva. Poor person. He doesn't even have a belt for his pants. He has a piece of string holding his pants up, which are filled with holes. His roof leaks. Because there's no roof, there's just some thatched straw up there. He eats his meals out of a paper bag. When he walks, his shoes go flap, 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 because the top's not connected to the bottom. He's got total shlomazel. He's got nothing. He's got nothing. You ever heard of the mice of a kid that, he was part of a very large family, and their kids wore things until they wore them out and they couldn't use them anymore. And the uppers got separated from the lowers, so he went flap flap every time he walked. So he begged his father for a new pair of shoes. And the father said, a new pair of shoes, it costs so much money, I don't know, you know, maybe we can do something to these. And the kid said, Dad, these things are gone. They go flap, flap here, flap, flap there. I walk down the street, everyone knows I'm coming. And the father said, you know, Uncle Daniel's coming next week from America. Maybe he'll pay for a new pair of shoes. So you're going to get Uncle Daniel to pay for a new pair of shoes? The father said, no, that's not how you do it. But he comes, you're going to go for a walk with him. And then your shoes will make a flap, flap. And he's going to ask you, what's that noise? And you're going to say, nothing. And then Uncle Dan says, no, what's that noise? And you're going to say, nothing. He'll notice it's your shoes. And then he'll offer to buy you a new pair of shoes. And he says, yeah. And then I say yes. He says, no, of course you don't say yes. You say, no, I'm fine with these. I've had these for so many years. They'll last for another few years. And then he'll buy you shoes. You got to do it right. You know, you can't just say yes. Listen. Yeah, Uncle Daniel comes. The kid goes for a walk with Uncle Daniel. Flap, 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 flap. Uncle Daniel, you know, says, what's that noise? He tells him what the noise is. He says, let me get a new pair of shoes. He says, no. He says, no, I insist. No, he said, we can't, you know, you just can't go like this. Uncle Daniel takes a big wad out of his pocket. Like a wad of 100, like a thick wad of 100 with a big rubber band around the wad. And the kid's eyes are just like lights up. Like, how many is he gonna get? You know, how many is he gonna peel off? Like, what kind of shoes is he gonna buy with all this money? And Uncle Daniel takes the rubber band off. He's holding the wad, and the kid's wondering how much it is. And then Uncle Daniel puts the wad back in his pocket. He gives the kids the rubber band. He says, "Here, put it around your shoes." The kid has the rubber band. He's what? No more flap flap. He's got a rubber band from Uncle Daniel. And he said, "Oh, I am so the man. I've got a rubber band around my shoes. I'm such a buckeye by this. I'm the hood. I'm the biggest hood. I'm the gangster in this place. You watch out for me, buckeye. You're sugar, buckeye. You got a rubber band on your 13-year-old shoes, so it doesn't go flap anymore. Who are you, there?" So now he told the buckeye. Gimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Seinen. Hashem hates an ani misyayo. He hates a poor person that has gaiva, because he's going against his nature to have gaiva. He hates an asher mechachesh. He hates a rich guy that lies because he doesn't have to lie. He's making a living. So why is he lying? Because he wants to lie so much, he's willing to go against his nature to lie. There's some people that if they have a choice between lying or telling the truth, they'll tell a lie. They'd rather tell a lie. And the Zaken Menayev is an old man, that he's immoral. He has no kaychus. He has no, you know, he doesn't have the flames of passion running through his veins. He doesn't have the fire, the molten lava that goes through the veins of a young person. He doesn't have it. And he goes out of his way to bring himself to Taiva. He's got one foot in the grave already, and he's trying to bring himself to Taiva. So that's what Hashem hates. A young person that has Taiva, it's wrong, it's a rishus, but that's B'derech HaTaiva. Hashem hates people that they go out of their way in order to do something wrong, Taiva. So now you turn to his Talmidim, and he said, "My dear Talmidim, let everybody get a notebook. A notebook with blank pages." And he said, "It doesn't have to have too many pages. For our purposes, it'll suffice. I have a notebook with just a few pages. And everyone should write down in the notebook." He said, "We'll start with Chumash. How many parshiyos do you know? Chumash. Write it down. If you know it, write it down. You know this parsha, you know, told us that you're bar mitzvah parsha, write it down. You know lach lecha, you know kisisa, write it down. And then have a little section there, you know, how many parshas do you know all the rashis in that parsha? Like, you just know what the psukim say, you know the mefarshim? And the Ramban, and the Rechayim, and the Kli Yakar. How many Pashas do you know with the Kli Yakar? And all the Mepharshim." He says, "Go and listen, all the Mepharshim. Just write it down. Do you know Breshis with all the Rashis? Do you know all the Rambans and Shmais? You know all the..." He says, "In Mishnais? How many Mishnais do you know? How many Prakim? How many Mesechtas do you know? How many with the Rav? How many with the Tais Yamtar? With the Mishnai Rishayna? With the Malacha Shleima, with the Yacham, with the Bayas. Write it down. You really, really know. How many Daffin, how many Masechtas? How many Daffin? How many Daffin, how many Taisis in?" And he kept going, you know? They were crying. You know, how much do you really know? Because they ask you, and on the spot, you can say you know. He said, you're an Iyam. You're poor people. You're impoverished. Look, fill up your pages. You don't have anything written down. You have the empty. You have a three-page notebook, and you only used up one of the pages." He said, "If someone would know, if somebody would be wealthy in what he's learned, and he would talk, he would know. He'd come to me and ask me for an etza and how to deal with gaiva." So there are eights how to deal with gaiva. I have what to tell him and help him. When someone comes to me and they can't, you know, they can't fill up a notebook on what they know, and you're learning for so many years. So you're kind of an ani. So what kind of gaiva could you possibly have? They have to teach you how to deal with it. That was the vav. Yavan has gaiva. Because Yavan has what to have gaiva? They have chokmah. And they have chokmah, but the chokmah that they have is the chokmah of this world. They understand the physical world. They understand the physical world more than any other nation ever did. They have the secrets of the universe. And they have gaiva. Someone has gaiva, they want to be the only one that understands things. Klal Yisrael also has chokmah, but Klal Yisrael understands things that are not part of this world. And we understand things about the neshama. We have mesiris about these things. I'm not saying that every single yid understands things, but you know, we understand Torah on so many different levels. We understand Torah on a pashtut level. As if the Torah is a guidebook on how to navigate yourself through this world. You know, Torah teaches you how to plow, how to plant, when to harvest, Shemitah. These are all things in this world. But then there's a Rashi, and then there's a deeper one, there's a Maral, and then there's a Medrash, and then there's a Sefer Azayir. And every single thing that we learn in this world, we learn on so many different levels. And some of those levels have nothing to do with this world. The same words mean so many different things. And we have access to them. You know, we just learned in Miguel's Esther Shiur today. It's probably the most important gain I ever heard. It's a powerful gain. The Gemara says in the Sechus Megillah that when Esther was responding to Achashverosh, she said, "Mihu zeh ve'ezehu? Who is this? Who is this that's trying to kill you and trying to kill your people? Who is it?" Because Achashverosh said he didn't know. "Tell me who it is." And Esther said, "Ish tsar v'ayiv. He's a man, he's an oppressor, he's an enemy. Haman harazeh. Haman, this evil Haman." The Gemara says that something happened between the first part of that pasuk and the second part of that pasuk. The first part of the pasuk, Esther said, "Ish tsar v'ayiv is a man. He's an oppressor, he's an enemy," and she pointed her finger towards Achashverosh. And Hashem sent a malach from Shemayim to push her hand towards Haman. She sensed that her hand was being pushed towards Haman. She meant to say Achashverosh Harazeh, but when she sensed her hand being pushed towards Haman, she saw that God doesn't want her to say that. She picked up on it. Yeah. Move your finger in that direction. She saw she was pointing towards Haman, involuntarily pointing towards Haman. So she changed her original script. She ad-libbed, and she said Haman Harazeh, and Haman got killed because of it.
What would that have accomplished in her thought process?
Right. Like, what was she thinking? You know, thank God, like we say, thank God Hashem sent the malach, and Hashem moved her hand away. Had Hashem not moved her hand away, what would have happened? How would the scenario have played out? So she's pointing her finger towards Achashverosh. She's talking to Achashverosh. She's telling Achashverosh that he is the enemy. And he asked her, Esther, who's the enemy? Who's trying to kill you? You, Achshverosh.
Gods?
You are evil. You are the source of evil. You are the oppressor. You are the one that's trying to kill me. It's you, Achashverosh. That's your kasha, Mayor? That's your kasha.
Not so many words.
The guy answers. That Esther operated on a different level. Esther was a prophetess. Esther had Ruach HaKodesh. Her body walked in this world. But she was with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. She wasn't talking to Achashverosh. She was at the party. She was at the Mishnah with Achashverosh and with Haman. And the moment came when she's going to, you know, give it all she got. She's going to try and save the Jewish nation. In her eyes, talking to Achashverosh is just a hishtabas. But the real Yeshua is going to come because she's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So she entered a state of tefillah, and she davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and she was having a dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while her body was at the party. And the Bilna Gaon says that she was so much in the state of dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when you talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're davening, save us from the oppressor, save us from the enemy, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you say the truth, Achashverosh. He was the king. He's the one with the power. He's the one that gave the ring to Haman in the first place. Haman wouldn't have been able to do anything without Achashverosh. He's the source of everything. And she's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save Klal Yisrael from each tzar v'ayim Achashverosh ha'razeh. Problem is that the soul of a person is connected to his body. She wasn't dead, she was alive. So her tefillah, her kavana to HaKadosh Baruch Hu reflected in her body. Her body followed suit, and her hand started reacting. She didn't even realize she was pointing at Achashverosh. She didn't even realize she totally was lost. She was lost inside of a dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you know, all thoughts of being politically correct and not hurting the one that you're appealing to help you. Like, we're totally out of her mind. She's talking to Kodesh Baruch Hu, that she's nowhere else. She's in Shemayim. Her body's here. There's a pasuk by Yaakov Avinu, v'nei sula mutzavar. So the ladder is on ground. Rishim agi Shemayim, and the Rishim Shemayim. And now you're on different levels. Like I saw. I was able to spend some time with Rav Shach, Zichron Livracha. I spoke to him learning. And I was able to spend some time with the Stipler, Zichron Livracha. I used to go to his house. And I saw, we talked to them about our concerns, Eitzes, and or even our questions of learning, which for our level, I guess there was something which we thought was a high level. I'm just saying, we're talking to them, and we're able to tell that they're not with us. He was talking to us, the staff was talking to us at the same time, his mind was somewhere else. I have no idea where it was. And the people that went to him used to see his lips moving while they were talking. He used to say Mishnayos all the time. He never stopped. Even when people visited him and they were asking him, they were elsewhere. The body is here. Only a Jew could do that. Someone from Yavin can't do it. They just can't. So they're intensely jealous. They're Baal Gaiva. When you're Baal Gaiva, you want everything. And if you don't get everything, so then what do? Either you're going to get what the Jews have, or the Jews aren't going to have it either. So this explains the particular hisnagdus of Yavin to Klal Yisrael. Because Klal Yisrael is capable of wisdom beyond this world. In Yavin, they have like a ceiling. They have a limit on which they can understand. But it has to be in this world. V'chein al-beis ha-migdash. Yavan, besides having this esnagdus, this extreme opposition to the Torah, they made a gzera, you know, to learn Torah. Why did they make that gzera? Because they can't tolerate it. They can't learn Torah. Klal Yisrael is not learning Torah. So they had a esnagdus to Torah. They also had a esnagdus to the beis ha-migdash. They defiled the beis ha-migdash. They were makiv korbanos in the beis ha-migdash of behemoth tmeis of a davar acher. They were metame the base of Midrash. Why'd they have to be metame the base of Midrash? Just leave it alone. Don't you have respect for religion? Leave it alone. They can't leave it alone because they can't have a base of Midrash. If they'd be able to have a base of Midrash, they'd leave Klal Yisrael's base of Midrash alone. They can't have one. They want it. Because when you went into the Beis HaMikdash, what happened? Whoever went into the Beis HaMikdash went in there the way, you know, properly, the way he's supposed to go. Whoever went into the Beis HaMikdash was transformed. A person in the Beis HaMikdash was not the same as a person outside the Beis HaMikdash. They were a different Bria, they were a different Nivra, they were transformed. And this is Mishnayos and Gemaras, Mefarish and Gemaras. I'm the Tzvukvim, Mishtachim, and Ravachim, that they would stand in the courtyard squashed like sardines. Or like vicious on bleachers or something like that. You're squashed, there's no place to go. You try and squeeze up there, another guy up there. It's a nice. It's amazing. You climb up there, you get squeezed in there. And then when it comes, when the Kohen Gadol says the shame of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, then everybody bows down. You can say, oh man, we're going to see how they pull this one off. And all of a sudden there's plenty of space. There's laws of physics. You have a body. A body takes up a certain amount of space. Some people's bodies take up more space than others. Some people are skinny, some people are less skinny. But there's laws of physics. That means if you're standing and there's no room to go, then you can't bend down. But their bodies are not normal bodies. Because their bodies are in the Beis HaMikdash. And when your body's in the Beis HaMikdash, your body gets the property of a soul. And souls do not take up space. So outside the Beis HaMikdash, your body has physical properties. Inside the Beis HaMikdash, your body has the same properties as the soul. It doesn't take up space. The Ivanim, they tried to build they made a beautiful, beautiful structure, beautiful building, and they went in there, got those all squashed, and tried to bend down. What do you say, like they pulled a hamstring. They couldn't untangle themselves. It didn't work, because they're stuck in this world. They can't make that journey. They can't go into a state that they can't go across that bridge. It's a bridge between this world and the next world. So they can't have it. And they want everything, and they can't have it. So the Beis HaMikdash has to become Tameh. If the Beis HaMikdash is Tameh, what was the Kavanah bringing the Chazer, the pig, into the Beis HaMikdash? The Kavanah was that if they defile it, then the miracles won't happen anymore. Push it. But if you buy a better car than me, yeah, I buy a Cadillac, you get a Rolls Royce. So I take a bag of sugar, open up your gas tank, and pour it in. If I can't have it, you can't have it. And I'll zoom by with my Cadillac, and you'll be there. Won't set up, and I'll this, you know. They put a pig in there. They weren't just trying to disgrace the Beis HaMikdash. They were trying to take away the sanctity, so that it's not going to work anymore. Trying to gum up the works, ruin the machinery. Like the workers in the factory, they want a strike. They throw a wrench into the assembly line, you know. And then it would hold up the whole assembly line for a day until they took apart the entire assembly line and put it back together. They're trying to destroy the assembly line. They're misnagging to the base of Mikdash. So the Torah is the way the Jewish mind transcends this world, and the base of Mikdash is the way the Jewish body transcends this world. Jewish soul is not the same as a Gentile soul. The Jewish body is not the same as a Gentile body. So Beis HaMikdash is how we elevate our bodies, and the Torah is how we elevate our minds. So that's why that we say them together. We say, Yiratzam ufanach Hashem alokeinu shibana Beis HaMikdash meir b'yameinu b'zein kakeinu b'tarah tzacha. We daven that we should have Beis HaMikdash and Torah. Because we daven that we should be able to be like we once were in both these areas. So that's why they had particular opposition to these things. The miracle of Hanukkah was through the menorah. The menorah has both, essentially. The menorah has both. First of all, the menorah is in the base of Mikdash. The menorah is a physical keli. It's made of gold. Physical gold. It's physical oil. They squeeze out a physical olive from physical oil and put it in a physical gold menorah, and yet it's holy. There are miracles every day that happen with the menorah. It's holy. And then there's the light of the menorah, which represents the soul. Fire in this world is the closest thing we have to Ruchnius. Even though fire is a physical thing, it's combustion and it's gases, it's a physical thing, but it's a muscle, it's like it's the closest thing we have in this world to Ruchnius. Because you put your hand through it, it rises up, it burns, you know. It's a physical thing, but it has certain qualities of Ruchnius. So the menorah had two components. It had the gold part with the oil part and the wick part, which is a body. And it also has the fire, which is neshama. So you have both special qualities of the Jewish nation, that their guf is a holy guf, and it doesn't have the same qualities as other physical entities in this world. Now the Gemara says that they used to light the Nama Ravi first. And then fill it, you know, every day they would fill it up again and relight it. And you know what it is with your Hanukkah lift if you do it right. Whichever one you light first goes out first. And the eighth night of Hanukkah you light one. It takes like a couple of minutes to get to, you know, 8, 7, 6, right, you know. And that one goes out first because you lit it first. And then the one was lit first and it went out last. Physical oil. Physical wicks. It had miraculous properties. And then you have the flame itself. The flame represents intelligence. It represents light. What's light? Light is when things become clear to the eye to see. So it's a muscle to seichel, to intelligence, to wisdom. So the menorah has the wisdom of the Jews and the body of the Jews. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the miracle that it lasted for 8 days, was dafka in the menorah. You know, there were other miracles. It was like the Lachem HaPanim, it was fresh for 7 days. There were other miracles. The menorah was chosen for this reason, because these are the two areas that Klal Yisrael are superior to the Yevanim. And these are the two areas that the Yevanim could not tolerate. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is showing the Yevanim that this is Klal Yisrael's. And it will always be Klal Yisrael's. And it was for 8 days. Why 8 days? Why the number 8? The Parak and Telem Parak Kuf Yates. It's a long Parak and Telem. I mean, if you've ever gone to someone on a yard site to the cemetery, then you're familiar with this. It goes according to the order of the Aleph Beis. But it doesn't just have 22 psukim. It has 8 psukim for every single letter of the Aleph Beis. So there's 8 psukim that start with the letter Aleph, 8 psukim that start with the letter Beis, 8 psukim that start with the letter Gimel, 8 psukim. And the minhag is to spell out the name of the Nifter, the Nifteris, and say the psukim that are contained in the names. The theme of Parak Kuf Yates is Torah. It's all about Torah. Like I remember Rabbi Gifter, Zichron Levrach, when he used to give a shmuz, he would say a pasuk with such longing, with such ecstasy, and he would say the pasuk as he's enraptured. He's been gripped by the emotion of the pasuk. It's difficult to duplicate. It's impossible to duplicate. But I remember when he was going through. He one time gave a shmuz. He was just reading through Tehillim Kuf Yates and going through psukim and touching it in Yiddish without going into depth, just pashup shot. And that effect, it affected all of us to this very day. It'll never go away. Gimel. Gorsa nafshi l'taiva. My nefesh chews over the Torah with taiva, with a burning passion. Gorsa is like girsa. Gorsa is that you take it and you chew it again, and mikaitas and mikaitas, and you mikaitas and mikaitas, and nachamal, and meestas, and metrinkas, and estas, oof! And not that taiva for them, reveal more, you want more and more, and you chew more. Gorsa nafshi l'taiva, you want more and more and more, and it's never enough, and it's like the most geschmack thing you can ingest. You went through the whole Albase. Kuf Yates is about the Torah, and there's 8 psukim for each one. So that means that the Limud HaTorah has a connection with the number 8. And that's what is 8 psukim. Because this is a yisayid which you surely have heard of, that the number 7 He brings another remez from Pesukah Dezimra. In Pesukah Dezimra says, "Lamatzeach mizmul David, Hashemayim besaprim kvod keil." The heavens, they relate the covenant of God, and the 7 pesukim one after another. Yaim liyem yabia aymer v'ayla yichavadas, and then the eighth pasuk. So this is Parak Yates, pasuk Aleph through Zayin. The 8th pasuk. A Parak Yates is Tairus Hashem Tamim and Meshivas Nefesh. So see, even in Parak Yates, the position of the 8th Pasuk is occupied by Taira. Because the first 7 Psukim of that Mizbar are talking about Olam Hazeh. Hashemayim Mesapurim Kvei Keel. It talks about the Rekia and the Yayin and the Lila. You go through the Psukim. A Parak Yates, every single pasuk talks about something in this world, and then the glorious Abayrin, the wondrous creations the Kadosh Baruch Hu made, and they are wondrous, but they're in this world. And the 8th pasuk is above Olam Hazeh. Everything in Olam Hazeh was created during the 7 days of creation. Torah was not created during the 7 days of creation. It's above Olam Hazeh. Torah was created before. So it's actually not the 8th, it precedes the 7. It precedes the 7. It's not like you have 7 and then you have 8. The 7 is what came before the 7. Torah was not created during the 7 days. It wasn't created in Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim. It wasn't even created on Shabbos. entire procedure of the world. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. It's called Aleph Al Gabi Zayin. You know, Aleph Al Gabi, one on top of seven. Which spells Oz. But that's another idiom, which Hashem will get back to it. But that's the aside, that Torah was not created during the 7 days of creation, and therefore it's not confined by them. Because it existed before there was the 7 days of creation. And that's why you have 8 psukim and kufiya tests for every single letter of the alapes, because the letters of the alapes represent the words of the Torah, and that's why in perikyut test it's the 8th pasuk. What?
When did he create?
Before the world was created.
Right. So
the first creation was Torah.
And we have a whole darshan as Bereshis in A beginning.
Bereshis starts with the letter Beis, which shows us that there was an Aleph before the Beis.
Right.
That's the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Since you don't. Aleph. Neither the Jews.